You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show on Joy 1250.
Well, a moment none of you have been waiting for, and I've been dreading. I'm on the hot seat, folks. I so much enjoy listening to other people's lives, and I also think there's probably some dysfunctional aspect to that, which basically is it keeps the focus off me. And that's been a trick of the trade for a lot of years. But I do genuinely find other people's lives very, very interesting. And how they work through their faith and what their spiritual journey has been and where it started and where it kind of went off track and how it kind of came back, or is it even back? I mean, it's actually more interesting to me, Bruxy, to chat with someone who is off track right then and there. I'm very sick and tired of the, why do we always say sick and tired? Why, can we just say sick?
Or tired.
Or tired.
And sick.
Yeah. Of the glory stories. You know, it's usually what we hear in church. You know, why are we that afraid of our wimpy God and our wimpy belief structure that we can't bring in somebody who's in the middle of some serious garbage?
It is worth noticing that all explanations or stories that involve weakness are past tense within Christian circles.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you don't hear a lot of, here's what I'm currently... Here's the porn habit I'm working through right now, and please pray for. But God is helping me work, and He's given me community to help me through. I mean, that's a powerful testimony right there.
An interesting story I read in Mike Iaconelli's book, Messy Spirituality, which I often quote and talk about. There was a church somewhere, and the pastor said, I'm stepping down. I can't pastor this church anymore, because he went to the board of elders and said, look, I can't, I'm not even sure if I believe this anymore. I'm not even sure if I believe that Jesus is who he said he is. And so I need to step down. You know what the board said to him? They said, okay, don't leave. Don't leave the church. Don't leave us. Matter of fact, now this is a risky move, and I don't think every church should do this, but we want you to stay and preach to us, talk to us about your concerns from the front. What are your doubts? What are your questions? Don't teach us something else, because you're a proponent of that, but teach us your concerns, your questions, your the whole thing. He did that. They agreed. 2 years later, the pastor broke down in front of the church during one of his messages and said, I cannot believe how patient you've been with me. Basically what he said is, I'm back. I'm not even sure I ever left, but it was a hell of a 2 years. And I'm back, and thank you for allowing me to have this opportunity.
It's hard for anyone in any form of spiritual leadership, and including what you're doing, Drew, because you influence people, whether you're considered a leader or not, or you consider yourself one, you influence people. It is difficult because many people in spiritual leadership, their identity has been wrapped up with a certain level of spiritual maturity and health. And people only see them as that person when they are at that level of maturity and health. And if they go through a spiritually unhealthy season, it is though they cease to be themselves. And then they have to make a choice. Do I tell people, or do I keep it private?
Well, and that's why people continue to struggle in the darkness, because that's where, I mean, mushrooms, festy fungus, nasty stuff grow in the darkness.
That's right. That's right. And you have compartmentalization, and you wonder why people who love God and are great spiritual leaders and are doing wonderful stuff, then you find out that there's some scandal. Why was some part of their life allowed to evolve separately from the rest of them? But we do that. We do that for all of us. So this is, I commend you for this opportunity for you to be out there.
Grilled.
And talk about you.
Yeah, baby. Bring it.
Hey, so we're speaking about weakness. I wasn't going to start here, but let's just dive right in. Where do you feel most vulnerable
Women.
In your spiritual life?
Women.
Yep. Just attraction.
Lust, attraction, intimacy. My wife and I have talked about this hundreds of times. I remember one thing that you said last time you were on our show was, I am not a naturally monogamous person.
Who is?
You said that about yourself. About.
Oh, did I say that? Oh, I was going to say, hey, me too. Oh, wow.
And I thought, wow, that's very interesting. That A, someone else would admit that, and then that B, that yeah, we could actually own the fact that due to this fallen world we live in, due to the fallen nature of man, due to the hard wiring of male chromosomes or, you know, genetics or hormones or whatever, I don't know if it's more for women than guys. I think it's more for guys. I think men are less bent towards monogamy. Anyway, so that's always been an issue, right? From the first time I was in grade 6 or 7 and found a stack of Playboys in someone's garbage. You know, I went, wow, this is great, and kept, you know, took the stash and hid it. And
then very quickly, for many people who are listening, they probably can relate to, then you have the choice. There's the underground part of me, and then there's the part of me that I share with others. What's been your journey as far as integrating the two? The root of the word integrity is integration. You know, it's the same to integrate. What times in your life have you had the separated private self that nobody knows, and I know we all have some issues that we only share with a few, but yep. What has been your journey to try and say, I want to be a whole person? I don't want to have you found success in that? Because many people are struggling.
No, I've not found success in that. My entire life can be described as one big lifestyle juggle. Good cop, bad cop, Fred Flintstone devil in one shoulder, Fred Flintstone angel in one shoulder, right, or the other shoulder.
You want to call for the Great Gazoo to come.
Exactly.
And
hello,
yeah.
Dum-dums.
lost all of our younger...
they're like, what the heck? So, but I've always had a passion to be vulnerable and to stay in the light, because I've lived in the dark long enough that it just scares the hell out of me. Mm-hmm. It just really does. Mm-hmm. I remember one time I was coming back from here's my problem. I tend to be more vulnerable when there's a crowd listening than one on one.
Interesting. Like now.
Yeah, like right now. And so
we better seize the moment.
Yeah.
We're going to get you talking about everything.
But see, I have the ability to, like, I'm recording this and we put it up on our website. I can delete things later, right? So that's no problem. Anyway, I remember coming back from a strip joint one time, and I was driving back, and I was married, and I wasn't convicted. And my knuckles went white. I just remember going, oh my goodness, that struggle that I've been so used to of acting out or sinning or, you know, doing whatever, and then having, you know, God just go, well, hold on, man, like, I love you and keep coming towards me, but you just got to know that was not a good thing. That wasn't there that night, and I was freaked.
You had made peace with your sin in the worst possible way.
Whew. That was scary. I'll never forget that night, man.
That could be a turning point. That
well, it should have been a turning point, except I'm just like the Israelites, as dumb as. And, you know, you justify, you rationalize. And we have these broken parts of our heart that we fill in unhealthy ways.
Yeah.
I go to a Christian counselor. Excuse me, I'm not crying, just in case you're wanting to know what those breaks are.
He's burping.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Yes, I was having some indigestion issues. Speaking of vulnerability, what was I saying? Oh, so I go to a Christian counselor now, and I just want people to know that it is a healthy... I kind of treat it like an oil change. I go every 5 years or so.
That's great.
And usually it's not because I'm that wise and strategic. It's usually because my life is falling apart again, and I need to go to a counselor again.
Do you know, it seems to me that if Christian community were all that it would be, perhaps we wouldn't need the role of counselors that we use them for today. But as North Americans, we are just not constantly living in the close-knit, brotherly, sisterly...
Interdependency.
And so, yes, we need that. You know, we can't change our own oil, or our Uncle Luigi can't do it, or whatever. And so we go to specific people
to
help.
But, you know, another reason I do that is for a couple of reasons. One, I feel the majority of people are useless, useless, useless listeners. Horrible listeners. Mm. You pour out into them, and immediately they go, you know, I can relate to that. Here's my story. And you're like... Okay, well, that's nice. Thanks for relating to me, and maybe you're trying to make me feel better, but this is actually about me right now.
Yeah, that's right.
So there's a lot of people that are horrible listeners. Number two, I pay to talk to somebody, a Christian counselor, for confidentiality.
Yes,
I don't trust people.
Right, right. Well, you know, it's interesting to say, both within the same paragraph, counselors play such a healthy and wonderful role within the body of Christ, and at the same time to say counselors exist. because Christians have not been what they should have been.
Yeah.
Like, it, ideally, wouldn't it be wonderful if we didn't need counselors? Like, if you came to someone and said, you know, you should talk to someone intimately, if they said, well, yeah, that's what I do. I'm in Christian community. I always do that, and I trust them, and that's normal. Yep. I don't have to set up a certain example. And I appreciate you. That's fantastic.
Yeah, let's just get vulnerable right off the bat. Why don't you start with where did you grow up?
Yeah, who cares about that?
Okay, yeah, apparently.
All right, but let's jump about. Tell me about your tattoo. I'm looking at a man with a tattooed wedding ring.
Yeah, that was a 15-year anniversary thing.
Wonderful.
And I came home and said, look what I got you, honey. And she said, did it hurt? I hope it hurt. Because if that's going to be a gift, it better have hurt. And it's Hebrew, and the word is a short form way of signing, finishing off a letter, like a, basically like saying with faithfulness. So the word is faithfulness.
Mm, nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And my wife said, wow, that's cool. I think I'll get one too. And my wife is even keeled, opposite of me, emotionally stable, you know, just the even keel, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes.
And she went, I think I'll get one. I went, yeah, wait, whatever. She went, anyway, she ended up getting one.
That is great.
Yeah.
That is great.
And hers didn't hurt.
Did anyone come to you with a Leviticus 17 saying, don't get tattoo marks on your body?
Oh, yeah, you can. I just slap them and move on.
Okay. And did you tell them the verse right after that says, and also never cut your hair or trim your beard?
Yeah, trim the sides of your, yeah exactly, right. Yeah. It, really, that's what it came down to. Right. Yeah, I don't have, I mean, the issue with me and tattoos is I don't have any more, number one, because they stink and hurt, and I don't want any more pain.
They do.
And number two, it's about the motivation behind it. Is it a look at me thing?
That's right. Yeah.
Is it a hey, look at me, I've got a tattoo thing? Like, why? I don't need to have anything else near your butt crack to draw attention to it. I have a hard enough time not looking there. You know, you girls who want that tattoo there, please. Right. Yeah. You know.
I love it. I think that's a tattoo I applaud. Did you know I got a tattooed wedding ring? Except it's all fading. So, Drew, I have to ask you, what's the theological significance when you get a tattooed wedding ring and it fades away?
Are you kidding me?
Is that God saying, well, now it's time to move
on? Are you kidding me? Your tattoo faded?
It's faded.
Was it a henna tattoo?
It was. No, I mean, it was a real tattoo. It just now it looks like it burned my finger. So I have to go back and get it done again. So much for permanence.
For free, I hope.
Yeah. Well, I was in Hawaii, so I'm not going to drive back.
No. Some guy in the alley, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I lost my wedding ring for the third time in a row, and my wife said, you know, it's time.
It's time. It's time. Yeah, just get that done. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about just some of the surface stuff.
Yeah.
You're born, raised where?
Born in Richmond Hill, Ontario. Grew up in a place called Marshall Funeral Home. Grew up in a funeral home. There's lots of material there, folks.
Well, wait, explain that.
Lots of material there. Was there a show called 6 Feet Under or something like that?
Something like that. Yeah,
anyway, that was basically my life.
What do you mean you grew up in Marshall Funeral Home?
Well, my dad owns the funeral home. Or he was, you know, used to be the big owner there. He's now selling it or whatever. But and that was our life. I didn't have a lot of friends that wanted to come over and play.
Right.
And when they did come over and play, we'd play hide-and-go-seek in the casket room.
Oh, you must have some creepy stories.
Oh, yeah, baby. I had one of the best Halloween parties ever. Ever. I had grown guys crying. It was a lot of fun. So,
spiritual background. How are you raised?
Yeah, grew up in the United Church.
Uh-huh.
My family took me to church. My family grew up in the country, and that's what you did. And that's a social aspect of living in the country. You do church.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a huge relationshipping aspect, but I always kind of, I knew there was some kind of weird spiritual dynamic to me because, like, when the Easter TV shows came on, like Charlton Heston in the Ten Commandments, or, you know, Ben-Hur, I don't know, whatever, Jesus.
Yes, yes.
That tune there just gets me crying, man. Oh, man.
I know. It's got me, too.
So,
it doesn't matter the special effects look like cartoons. It doesn't matter. To me, that's always the pinnacle. That's it. We need CGI.
So let it be written.
Yes.
So let it be done. Anyway, and then I as a kid, just started having some issues. I was turned into a kind of an angry, rebellious, lonely kid, and was not treating my family that well at all. I remember my mom trying to discipline me one time, and I hit her back. My sister, I remember pushing her kind of hard, and I remember her kind of going down the stairs one time. And so I was turning into a real jerk. Stealing a lot of money from my dad, stealing the funeral cars, driving down Yonge Street without my license. That was a lot of fun, man. Oh, pumping tunes in a hearse, let me tell you, that was cool. It's not a chick magnet, though, but cool.
No, yeah. All right.
Never has that term ever been associated with me. That's the funeral. Where were we? Oh, spiritually, United Church. Because I was a rat bag, my parents sent me off to a boarding school.
All right.
And then to summer camp, and that's where I went to Teen Ranch.
There's the connection. There's the connection.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And I found a place where they accepted me with boundaries. They kicked me up the bum when I needed it, but they loved me as well. And there was something different. You know, we've heard that phrase before, but there was something different about the staff at Teen Ranch. Mm. And I knew it was a Christian place, but there was something different.
They modeled the difference between acceptance and agreement. They could say, we're not going to agree and approve of how you behave, but we can accept you within the process of discipline.
Exactly.
Right on.
Exactly.
Did you know I went to Teen Ranch too?
You did?
I did.
As a camper?
I did, as a camper, years and years ago.
Really?
Yeah, I went to their hockey camp.
Really?
I got the most improved player award.
So you sucked at the beginning of the week, right?
And I sucked at the end. But I improved a lot.
That's funny.
Yes.
Well, we could have been there at the same time.
You never know.
Do you remember any names from back in those days?
I remember no names.
All right.
No, I was shy and couldn't
introverted?
Talk. That was it.
Yeah,
and I still
can't relate to that.
No, I know you never could. Tell me about the show. How did this get started? When did this dream come about? Because there's a lot of people. I want to say something to you now that I said to you off air. Mm. I'll just try and say it quicker. I think this is the value that you contribute to the Christian community in this area, is that regardless of what your topic is, you are modeling a kind of celebratory, embracing Christian faith, imperfect and flawed, but it doesn't really matter what the topic is. You are modeling for people a kind of Christian faith that struggles to be real and authentic and doesn't just get caught up with the arguments of judgment and denouncement. I'm not saying that you're trying to pretend there should be no arguments or no debates, but that you're modeling a form of approach to all of that, whatever the topic is, I think is really valuable. We don't have people modeling that for us within the Christian church today.
Mm, it's a rare thing.
Yeah. So
thanks.
I appreciate it. It's more the way you go about than it is any one particular topic. And that being said, where did this show come from for you?
Yeah. Well, when I was on full-time staff at the ranch, our marriage was finally in a good spot for a few years. And I said to my wife, what do you think about international move? Maybe going somewhere overseas to do to do Jesus stuff, because that's what you do, isn't it? Isn't that the next step? And she said, yes, that was the first miracle.
Huh.
And the second miracle was that the paperwork and everything kind of finally came through, and we went to Australia, moved there with 9 bags of clothes, 2 children, my wife, no job, no place to live, and said, okay, God, this is the faith thing. I'm going to invest in this thing called faith. I've been crapping on about it for years. Let's make a move here and see what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 months later, I accepted a position as associate pastor at Glenbrook Baptist Church up in the Blue Mountains. All of that is to say that part of my style there in speaking was I kept thinking, Who am I to think that I can actually teach these people much about the spiritual life? Hmm. Like, why would I want to go on and on about grief? Why wouldn't I just bring somebody up who just had their 8-year-old killed in a car accident? Hmm. Why don't we talk about it that way? Hmm. Why don't we do interview messages? And I came back from doing this thing in Australia for 5 years, tremendous experience, and went, what am I going to do now? Not really into the church scene. I'm a bit burnt out, as that does happen once in a while.
Yeah.
And not thoroughly impressed with the scene in Canada, in North America. They're still saying things like, wow, come to our church. We wear jeans. What is that? And we drink coffee. Whoa,
that'll keep people spiritually interested.
Holy
in Jesus.
Jumping. Like, you know, what you wear and what you drink is still an issue here in North America, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and said, maybe I, and honestly, it was one of those 3 a.m. things. I don't know whether it was the Holy Spirit or indigestion from the garlic the night before, but God talks to me, unfortunately, on his time schedule, not mine.
Uh-huh.
And 3 to 4 a.m. is usually when I get some cool thoughts, and it went, hey, why don't you think about doing a radio thing where you interview people and get people to share their journeys and their stories and their lives?
That is awesome, because you're the right guy doing the right thing.
It's
great to know that you're doing this. What has been, in briefly, what's your current status and struggle with this particular show, or delight and joy? Where are you at right now as someone who's maybe just tuning in and saying, okay, I'm starting to like this Drew Marshall guy, but where is this going? Is he going to do this forever? Is this something he just started doing?
Yeah, good question, actually, yeah. I would like to interview Donny Osmond about why he's a Mormon.
Okay.
I would like to interview Prince about why he's a Jehovah's Witness.
All right.
And I would like to interview a Satanist about why he worships Satan.
Yeah.
However, this is a Christian radio station, and there are a lot of hot-button panic push out there who would hear that and phone the management. They would complain. The management knows that they would complain, and so they've said, look, you know, just kind of keep it in the confines of the Jesus stuff.
Interesting.
Because I'm not as scared, that's not a word, but I'm still not as scared of the Jesus I worship,
yes,
of the faith I believe,
yes,
of of the whole package. I don't think mirroring it up against something else, I'm going to fall apart and crumble.
Well, what people sometimes forget is that in Acts 17, when Paul quotes Greek philosophers back to his Greek audience, Acts 17, he quotes a couple of them. At some point in his life, he had to study Greek philosophy. He had to read Greek poetry. He had to get to know other worldviews so that he could use them. I mean, people say, isn't that neat how he was able to just spout that off? But at some point in his life, he had to hang out with people who knew this stuff and learn from them in order to point to Jesus through that language. Yeah. So, I wish you would be able to do that.
Yeah, it would be nice. And it might get to that point. I just have to, watch my boundaries and P's and Q's, which I'm horrible at doing, as many know. But the other thing is, Christian radio, especially in Canada, is kind of works the opposite way. If you have something that you think is good to go on Christian radio, you have to pay them to have your show on. They don't hire people and say, they hire a program director, a music director, and a swing guy sort of a thing.
Right.
But anybody else who has good programming, they say, no, you pay us.
To be on the air.
You pay us to be on the air. Right. That's how they make their money. Yeah. And I don't have that money to do that.
So you can't pay to have your show on the air.
No. So,
but you've turned it back to something that's more normal for, or at least a secular a person who's listening to secular radio to have a show that then has advertising.
I hope so. I think that's the idea. My idea was to put quality programming and quality guests and quality content in for a steady 3 years, and then hopefully people would say, wow, I would like to advertise on that show because I know people listen, because I listen, and I know it's growing, and that happens to be the reality, and we've successfully branched into that
market.
That's
awesome. Hey, by the way, did you know that I interviewed Mormons as part of our Sunday service when we did the topic of Mormonism?
Good for you.
And I had a Scientologist come in when we talked about Scientology.
You had Tom in?
Well, I didn't have to.
Wow.
No, Tom was busy.
Was he?
Yeah.
Canceled that week, did he?
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Not that I'm bitter with
that's
it.
Right. Yeah. So it can be done.
That is great, man.
It can be done.
It really is good.
Thanks.
That's a passion of mine, is to... to just our listeners have heard this probably many times, but my phrase is it frustrates me when Christians shove their head in the sand because it just leaves a bigger target and a good spot to park your bike.
Okay, you're full of phrases. You just say a lot of really.
I'm just a walking bumper sticker.
That's right.
I'm like the Cliff Clavin of radio.
How did you get this? Where did it come from? I don't know. Okay, so what bugs you? What really just bugs you about life? About the, doesn't have to be about the church, just in life. What
pet
can get
peeves?
Under your skin? Yeah.
Pet peeves. I was thinking about that the other day. Pet peeves. Christians.
Mm-hmm.
People have accused me of not liking Christians, and I'm one of them. So I know that I irritate people in certain ways. But I'm sick of the tribe.
Mm.
I love Jesus, and I hopefully continue to serve him. I can pull out the crystal ball there, but that's where my head is at with all this. But I'm sick of the tribe mentality, the tribal nuances, the phraseology, the catchphrases and the language and the ethos and the smell, just the smell of it.
Yeah. We're patrolling our borders instead of looking at the center, at Jesus.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's the tribal mentality of, it's all about who's in and who's out. And it's very important to patrol that borderline and decide who's one of us, as opposed to just turning to Jesus. When you're turning to Jesus in the center, you're not really as concerned about who's on the borderline.
When I was interviewing James Brown, and he said, I said, how long have you been, really settling with Jesus? He said, well, when I was about 62. Well, he's 72 now, so that's 10 years.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And during that time, he's had hardly any discipleship and hardly any mentoring.
Mm.
I mean, what 62-year-old world-famous star says to somebody, will you mentor and disciple me? Not very many, right? Be great if you could. But that means his theology is probably not 100% accurate.
Right, right.
I've been following Christ for 25 years, and I've had discipleship and mentoring, and my theology is not 100% accurate.
Right, right.
So I still wrestled with when he said, I believe that if you believe what you believe in, and I believe what I believe in, then we'll all get to heaven together, right? That pluralistic kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I had some people go off on me on that. Why would you put James Brown on the interview like that? Why would you air that interview? That's poor theology. That's horrible. He can't really be a Christian if he has bad theology.
Okay, this is rewriting 1 Timothy 2:5 again. One God, one mediator between us and God, and that is having proper theology. No. It's Jesus.
Yeah.
As someone once said, I believe in the doctrine of justification by faith, but I do not believe that I am saved by believing in the doctrine of justification by faith.
Yeah.
I'm saved by Christ, and then so I think some people who have misguided theology, which is all of us, are going to arrive on Judgment Day and find out, oh, no, I was completely wrong about that. Mm. But because of my faith in Christ, I'm saved. Mm. I'm brother to you and sister to you.
Yeah, well said.
Why do you think, we've talked about things that bug you or don't, you've talked about it earlier in the show about things in the church that drive you nuts.
Yeah.
What is the source of it? From your point of view, you've talked to a lot of people, and you've taken a lot of flack from short-sighted Christians. What do you think is at the source of this mentality that at least for yourself is very frustrating? It is for me too. What's the root cause?
Here's my best church lady impersonation.
Okay.
Satan? Remember the church lady?
Yes,
on
I do.
Saturday Night Live?
Yes.
I guess. That just sounds like a cheesy, lame answer. But I think, you know, he attacks from within and broken humanness and selfishness and I think our fallen nature and I think our Jeremiah 17:9 hearts. And I just think we're schmucks. We're just duplicating the track of the Israelites in so many ways.
But we don't want to admit
we're
it.
We're imploding. Mm. Yeah, we don't want to admit it. Yeah. So it just happens to be exacerbated by the fact that we live in North America where we live with a consumeristic, and these words get so, I got a buddy of mine who laughs every time I use these words because I use them a little too much. Yeah. A consumeristic, narcissistic, navel-gazing thing here in North America. And you stir all that in a pot and you get an anemic church.
Mm-hmm. So we're products of culture more than products of Christ?
Yeah. Oh, heck yeah. Oh, heck yeah. It's pretty sad when people in Thailand or whatever, I don't know, someplace over there, hide in caves for 3 months because they don't want to get killed for reading the Bible, and they study the Word of God in a cave, and the only time they leave the cave is to dump out their excrement in the bush at night. Mm. And the guy who I spoke with who visited these people said, as he was leaving, he said, you know, we are burdened to pray for you over there in North America. You have it so bad.
Mm.
You have it so bad. Mm,
interesting.
You've got all these material distractions.
Yeah.
How can you ever survive spiritually?
I heard somebody say that with the slow dwindling in North American Western spirituality or Christianity and the fact that Christianity is growing around the world in other cultures, it may be the first time that Christianity is not dominated by Western culture. And that could be a cool thing.
That'd be a very cool thing.
We'll now be able to start to learn from fellow brothers and sisters around the world who can come back to us and say, do you see where you have been products of your culture and you haven't known it yet?
Very cool thing.
Yeah, that is.
Now, I'm just going to interrupt you just for a second.
Right.
I said I would do this, and this is potentially very embarrassing because maybe no one will call, no one will care, and that's actually okay with me. But I did want to leave that because we're talking, I want to model vulnerability. Right. And so we're going to open up the phone lines. If you want to phone in and ask a question of me, this sounds so arrogant to do this. It really does. It's like I'm getting a rash.
Yeah, you're worth talking to.
905-338-1250. I'm an open book right now. If there's, you can ask me any question. If it's too weird or personal, I'll answer that question for you, but I'll answer you later, maybe through email or a phone call or something like that.
Yeah. Get him while he's drunk, folks. Yeah. Come on, call in now.
I just came back from the Toronto Airport Christian Fellowship. And
I'm
loaded.
That's it. He'll talk about anything.
905-338-1250. That is the phone number. And I am the journey segment today, folks.
That's right.
Trying to model vulnerability.
You're listening to the Bruxy Cavey Show, and I'm happy to have as my guest, Drew Marshall.
Beautiful. Actually, someone is calling, which is probably my dad. So we'll find this out. Hi, who's this?
This is Sherry.
Hi, Sherry. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Very well.
Drew, I wanted to ask you a question. I do listen to your show occasionally.
Thank you.
And I think that, just because of time, not because I don't appreciate it, I think that I heard you say a while back that either you don't pray or you don't pray often. And I wondered where you were with that and why. What your reasoning would be behind that.
Yeah, good question. My spiritual disciplines are out the window, which is why I ask a lot of our guests what their spiritual disciplines are and how they kind of keep that going, because I'm looking for that magic key. But my daily time in the Word is pathetic. My daily prayer life is pathetic. I wish I had more intentionality. Maybe desperate, horrible circumstances will come into my life and that'll cause me to go to my knees. I hope not.
How do you wrap your brain around the fact that when we're Christians, we're to follow Christ, and to follow someone, you have to get to know them and be in relationship with them and talking to, like when you're in relationship with someone, you talk to them.
Yeah. I find it very hard talking to air.
Yeah.
It drives me nuts. That is the number one thing about this living in this in-between time. Christ used to walk on the earth, and Christ is going to return, and yet here I am in this supposed relationship with the in-between Christ, the invisible Christ, and all he reveals himself through Scripture, or through creation. And to be quite honest, when I'm out on my horse for 2 or 3 hours, that's probably my greatest community with Christ. Mm. But I don't get it, and I don't understand love. Number one, I have a hard time loving a male, period.
Yeah.
Because I'm a male.
That's a guy thing, right?
Yeah, it's a guy thing, I think. there's some guys out there there's no problem with. But, you know, to say, oh, you got to, you know, fall in love with Jesus, I just go, ooh. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I got a lot of issues.
Hmm. Well, I appreciate your honesty with that. I mean, I struggle with that sometimes myself. I've experienced a lot of loss in my life. My mom died when I was 16, and we lost our first son about 18 years ago, and you know, where was God with that? And I just have to come to the realization that I have to trust him, and the reasons, they don't matter because I'm not going to understand them. Like, there's never going to be a good enough reason for that.
Yeah, exactly.
And so praying, there have been a couple of times in my life when, you know, I've really needed to know that he's real and there, and he's come through in those times, but unfortunately, they're few and far between.
Yeah, and I think after 25 years plus of doing the Jesus thing,
yeah, me too.
I have tried every spiritual discipline going and failed to keep up any spiritual discipline, you know, whether it be, you know, people say, well, you can't pray, well, then journal. Well, I've journaled, and then that stopped.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking, I wish there was a www.god.com where you could just send emails to God, you know, because that's part of my life. I could send God an email. But to stop everything, to be quiet enough, oh, I can't be quiet, can I, from our last interview?
Well, not silent.
Not silent, right.
Or yeah. Still.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, it's very tough, very tough. But, I thanks for caring.
Yeah. I appreciate you, praying for you. You're doing a good job.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Okay.
Bye. Look, someone else cares. This is almost like Miracle Day. It's a telethon. Hey, who's this?
Yeah, this is Chris. Yeah, I've listened to a lot of Christian radio. I started listening to, well, I used to watch WDCX from Buffalo, and there was another state that listened to the one. They have quite a few more down in the States.
Yeah, lots.
Talked to DJs. I just wondered, have you ever tried any secular DJ, like, besides trying the Christian stuff? Or, like,
yeah, number one, I couldn't handle DJing, spinning music and stuff. That would drive me insane because I'm just too talkative. But to do a talk show thing, I did approach RB, CFRB, about it, and spoke with their program directors, and I'm just too Jesus-y for them.
Oh, I see.
And I'm not Jesus-y enough for a lot of the listeners on this station, so
oh, I see. Okay.
You know, I'm kind of like the old Larry Norman syndrome, you know,
okay.
Caught
right,
between a rock and a hard
time. Right.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, yeah. This breaking into the secular thing, I used to think that in the early state of doing what I was doing, that was like the pinnacle of the career. You could use the Christian scene as the stepping stone into the real world,
right,
like
right.
Amy Grant did.
Yeah, that's right. You can finally cross over.
Oh,
see, you're caught in a hard place because you're one of those people who has the talent, the skill, the ability. I think anyone listening to the show would say, okay, now there's a guy who's on his game. And when you're interviewing people, sense of humor, fast pace, etc., your mind is bright, you could be doing secular radio. At the same time, you love Jesus, and that leaks out a lot.
Hmm.
Yeah, but at the same time, you're way too honest and open to fit nice and neatly into Christian radio.
Yeah, no, I don't fit nicely here at all. You just check my hate mailbox.
And that's why we love you.
Yeah. Hi, who's this?
This is Joyce.
Hi, Joyce. How are you?
I'm fine. I kind of to tell you how much I love you.
Oh, well, thank you, Joyce. That's very nice. Thank you very much.
And don't give up. Hold on.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Joyce.
Just keep thinking about him and loving him, and he will do the rest.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Okay.
Take care.
We need more Joyces in the world.
Oh, yeah. That'd be nice.
God bless Joyce.
You know, it's funny, and sorry, in case you just tuned in, you're in the middle of the Journey segment on the Drew Marshall Show, and I'm the guest today, folks. So a couple of people I know said to me, look, you want everybody else to be vulnerable. Why don't you be vulnerable? And so I'm opening myself up to you.
What scares you, Drew? Do you have anything that scares you? Do you have any, whether it's chronic fears or just you occasionally cycle back to something that gets you worrying?
I used to be feared. I used to be afraid of spiders until I moved to Australia.
All right.
And they're everywhere. So I got over that. I honestly had a dream about once every month and a half where I was a waking dream. I would think a spider dropped from the ceiling, landed on my bed, and I would crawl out from underneath the sheets real carefully and then rip the sheets off my bed to shake the spider out, which scared the living snot out of my wife, right?
This is not a kid thing.
She was
you're married, and you're like,
oh yeah, oh yeah. So anyway, I don't do that anymore, and my wife's quite happy about that.
I'm sure she is.
Fears would actually probably be fear of intimacy. I have a fear of intimacy, of connecting with people. I'm a fairly fairly by myself kind of a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Which is odd because, you know, doing this kind of a shtick or even as pastors, you would know sometimes because you're open and vulnerable and communicating this way, people, they feel connected to you. They
yes.
feel a connection.
Yes.
And then they try to connect it to you, and then you pull back, and then they get offended.
Right.
And
you have a lot of acquaintances, a lot of connections at one level.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so talk about intimacy. Aside from your wife, how many do you have in your circle? Is it one? Is it two? People who you say, now here's someone I can be completely transparent with. You talked about professionally, going for that oil change every so often because there's someone who is sworn to confidentiality you can completely be real with. Is there anyone beyond that?
No.
Okay.
No, I for total confidentiality,
yes.
It's a paid counselor because they are not allowed to say anything to anybody.
That's true. You could go to confession.
I could.
But then someone would accuse you of being Catholic.
Yeah, no, and you wouldn't want that.
No, you wouldn't want that. No.
Not that there's anything wrong. Anyway, maybe one and a half people.
Uh-huh.
Maybe one and a half.
Yeah.
But still 100% completely open and vulnerable.
Okay.
Nobody.
I understand.
Nobody. And I know that's a fault. That's confess your sins to one another and you'll be healed. I've been stuck with not having a lot of healing over the last. I've been living this. And see, here's the thing: if I wasn't a Jesus guy, I would come out with stuff.
Right.
But because you're a Jesus guy, there is you're risking losing community, losing relationship, having people see you in a particular way.
Yeah.
If you didn't have the Jesus baggage, you could come out with this and you'd be congratulated for being so honest and open about coming out to being gay or hold on now, I'm not telling again, not that
they're doing wrong.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah,
but because I live in this Christendom thing, in this realm of Christianity, if I was, and I did this once, I came out and confessed a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
And I was treated very differently after that.
Isn't this sad? What a lesson for the church, for all of us,
Because
we're all part of creating Drew Marshall.
Yeah,
right?
That's a bit scary, actually. Hi, who's this?
It's Mike.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Not too bad, how are you?
Well, I'm feeling a little naked right now.
Well, yeah, I really appreciate your honesty, because I could, really relate to what you're saying, like Lars not being totally open and like you said about being a Jesus thing. It seems like when I come to Christ, I keep it more secret. My things that don't come out right out and open with people like I think I should, but.
Yeah, well, I think that the wise thing in that is I've met other people on the other side of the spectrum who come out and tell everybody everything.
All the time.
And you just go, whoa, just back off a little bit. So that's the other end of the spectrum. But then there's the my unhealthy end of the spectrum, which I think is there's a few contributing factors. Number one, I'm a male, right? And we're pretty,
tight. We're closed up.
Yeah, we're pretty closed up. Number two, I live in North America.
Mm-hmm.
And number three, I live in Jesusville. And that, all those three things combined means, you don't want to be coming out and airing your dirty laundry.
And frankly, while the first two are a bit of a struggle or a hurdle, the last one is the killer.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of males who live in North America who are able to become honest about who they are.
Sure. Sure, especially in the gay community.
Yeah, that's right. And just say, okay, here's my issues.
It's one thing I love about that community.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, okay, air it out. So you get that, Mike?
Oh, most definitely. No, years ago, like I'm 50 now, I not to get in too much detail, but I led quite a sinful life right into my mid 20s, and without going to church or anything, one day I just heard something on TV about coming to Christ and how to come to Christ, and I had friends that were Christian. They never really mentioned that all you have to do is come as you are. It was more or less focused on my sin. I thought I could never be a Christian because I was just too sinful. I could never overcome my sinfulness, right? But I stood the sinner's prayer without expecting anything, and I could just felt the presence coming over me. But you know, it I thought things would change, but you know, things got worse. Because I, you know, I couldn't come open, and when I did come to certain Christians or whatever, it was like this kind of mistrust thing. Because I think a lot of it was because of my background. I didn't trust people to begin with. I couldn't come out open, but you know, I kind of kept my Christianity to myself, which I know wasn't a good thing. And you know, I kind of slid back in my old nature and all this sort of stuff, and I backslid for years. And but I think God was always there, and I think it was really till I had, you know, things kind of really messed up that I kind of came back to Him. But I, you know, I like just like the previous guest you had on there before, you know, I got wrapped up in all these different denominations and evangelicalism and all these different things. I used to get so confused about which is the right church and which is the right doctrine. You want to do the right thing, and you know, I kept avoiding going to church because I go to one and they'd be cutting up another church, and I just kind of left for a long time. I just kind of read my Bible, but I wasn't really being fulfilled at all. And I knew it was a conviction. I had to join a church, and I know 5 years ago I went. A friend of mine belonged to a evangelical non-denominational church, and I went there for a while. And, you know, it was the same thing. You know, somebody picked out a scripture and about, you know, the vine. You know, Christ says, you know, abide in me, you know, I'm the vine, and, you know, if not, I'll throw you in the fire, and, you know, that type of stuff.
Sure, yeah.
And the senior pastor there came out and said, well, that's the United Church. Whoever goes to the United Church, they're all going to burn in hell. I thought,
isn't that special?
And I thought, I said, I'm not going. You know, I thought, this is the same thing that, It struck me right there and then, because I remember when I was a kid, I grew up in a small little community. My parents never went to church. They had a United Church church in that community, and the pastor came down because they're a new family. And well, he was one of these fire and brimstone type of preachers, and he said, we're all going to hell. We're all going to burn because of our sins, and if we don't go to church, well, my parents never went, you know, he wouldn't take us, right? But just at that moment, he said that, cutting up this United Church, saying that, you know, from that one pastor, and then I thought, here, I remember that United Church pastor saying the same thing, right?
Yeah, so Mike here, Brexy here, getting to play show host. If you had the chance to ask Drew Marshall one question, I know most people say if you had the chance to ask God one question, but now it's Drew Marshall. What would that question be?
I've asked Drew, I think, you know, I've heard him speak a few times, and this is honestly that I think if that's what I think most people should focus on and not get wrapped up on all these other...
Thanks, Mike. I think that's a good point to end on.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
See ya.
It is true, though. It's the honesty, right?
I mean, it is.
That role model something that other people are not finding in churches. They're finding not all churches, but we're all part of the problem as well as part of the solution.
You know, I was thinking back to that fear, and we'll wrap this up because it's done, folks. I don't want to talk about me anymore, but I'll wrap it up with this because I think it's an interesting thing to share from the point of view that I hope someone resonates with this and learns from this. I was adopted as a young child, and I think every adopted person I've ever met has got some kind of baggage. So, and I'm not saying you have to have baggage. I'm just saying everyone that I've ever met has got some kind of issues or baggage. And in looking into my fear of intimacy thing, I saw this burden for connection and intimacy and desire, but yet I shun it away. Mm. And or it doesn't fill me up. And I think we all have love canisters, for lack of saying anything normal. And mine get filled up, but then they leak out. I have a crack in the bottom of my love canister kind of thing. And I'm just starting to explore how that's connected with adoption stuff. I just found out that I was sort of, born, and then I was sort of in a sterile environment without my mother. Like back in those days, you're born and you're taken away from your mom.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
There's like, don't touch the baby, don't look at it,
right,
nothing, just
right,
your
right.
way. And then 15 days later, I was given to the adopted family. So for 15 days, I was just a baby in a hospital kind of thing.
Right, right.
And I often wonder, does that have any effect on somebody?
Oh, you got issues.
Attachment. Oh, I got issues.
Yeah. Oh, you're screwed up.
Issues. Yeah. We got issues.
the church's message to you should not be, that's fine, Drew. You haven't found what you're looking for completely yet. You haven't settled. You're not totally at peace with. But until you are, Drew, please pretend that you are.
Yeah.
And we'll feel better.
Ta-da!
Yeah. But that's the signals we send.
Yeah, and it reminds me of a Jackson Brown song, The Great Pretender.
Can I ask one last one?
Yeah, yeah.
Where do you see yourself 5 years from now? Where do you want to be five
I
years?
Hate
what do you
that
want to be
stinking
doing?
Question. I ask that of other people, too.
Where are you headed?
I am so not a strategist. This is how I play chess, okay?
All right.
If you and I were to sit here and have a game of chess, I would take as many of your players as possible and then try to surround your king.
All right.
That's my strategy. I can't think three moves ahead
okay,
and ten
all right.
moves ahead kind of thing.
That's what makes you a good interviewer. You're living in the now, in the moment,
so
in the present.
In the now. I am just an absolutely in the now
that
kind,
is
of,
great.
Kind of a person.
Right.
And, I've got thoughts of, dreams, and I do dream a little bit, but I really don't know. I'm so happy doing what I'm doing now. And I do like, at the start of doing this show, I sort of said, look, a job description, how could you describe what I do? I like finding those with holy hand grenades up their butt and pulling the pin. The spiritual gift of mine. Does that make any sense?
That's
at all?
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Anything that has to do with the Monty Python will do.
Yeah, work quite well.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen. That is thoroughly enough of me, and that was excruciatingly painful. I hope it was beneficial to somebody out there. Well, it was to Mike, our last caller. So that's
it was to me.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. No
thank
doubt.
You.
No
thank
doubt.
You. Thank you very much. We are going to take a break. And delete all of that last 45 minutes or whatever. And when we come back, we're going to talk about divorce. Would you be comfortable having a pastor who is divorced? Would you be comfortable having a pastor who is divorced? And by the way, let's talk about this divorce thing. Is it really as bad as Christians make it out to be? We'll be right back. Hang tight.
Like what you've heard? Listen again online at drewmarshall.ca.
My name is Gary Munnings. I'm in a family business called Iseco Safety Shoes. My dad started the business in 1938. I think he had $27 in his pocket when he started. So many things are incorporated now in footwear that make it safe for the employee or for the environment in which they're working in. CSA is the Canadian Standard Association, and they have standards for just about everything. They also have a standard for safety footwear. So there are standards now that are for the steel toe cap, the puncture-resistant sole, for metatarsal protection, the front of the foot. If someone's working around high voltage, they don't want to be grounded, so they're electrostatic resistant. Then on the other end of the scale, you've got electrostatic dissipating, so that they can get rid of electricity, so they don't build up a charge and maybe cause an explosion in an area where they're working with paint or gunpowder or gasoline. Slip resistance is very big right now. It's something that we're working on. Then you've got people working in the bush and they've got chainsaws. So you've got special shoes that are and boots that are made to protect their legs.
Iseco, specialist in safety footwear since 1938. To find a location near you, go to www.iseco.com.